8:15 having arrived, I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order. And we do have a quorum, so we're going to start out with, I think, some minutes. We have the minutes to April 2nd, 2013. Would anyone care to move those minutes? Representative Myra moves the April 2nd, 2013 minutes. Any discussion? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carry. The minutes are approved. Members, today we've got House File 1643. And this has to do with the teacher evaluation system that was put in place in the law a couple years ago. This year was pilots for the principals. Next year the principals will start in full earnest. And while it will be a pilot for the teachers, and then the following year after that, it's full bore for the teachers. And members, we have a dilemma in that, you know, the bill and the evaluation process is in place. It's in law. And even dating back to a couple years ago, there was from the management and budget, I saw something that at one time was even $80 million cost. So whether or not it's $10 million or $200 million, this is going to cost the schools, if they're going to do this right, some money. So right now on our hands, we basically have an unfunded mandate. Mm-hmm. So what I want today, we're going to hear from this bill on just some of the ways in which they've come up with costs. But I'm looking for a little bit of a discussion today on how we can... what we can do, because you know the money is tight, and yet we've got this program for school. So if we can put our thinking caps on today and see what we can do to kind of wrestle with this thing and see if we can come up with some ideas. So anyway, with that, Representative Bernardi, would you like to move House File 1643?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1643 for possible inclusion in the omnibus education omnibus finance bill.
Very good. Please proceed and welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You did a very good job at introducing my bill, so I don't really need to spend a whole lot of time on it. But as you said, this is an unfunded mandate. I think that it's a bill that a number of schools want to do. I mean, it's about teacher development and teacher evaluation. The bottom line is we can't just put our blinders on and say it doesn't cost any money to do this. It takes people to be trained. It takes people to be assigned to be able to do these things. And it takes follow-through by peer review and administrators and developing a system. And a lot of these things we're going to talk about today, the cost impacts there are to schools. So I'm not going to – you did a great job at introducing this, and I think it's good to have a conversation. And we're going to move over here with our first presenter. Thank you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And before I get into the piece, I think it's important to understand that our staff, along with Ed Minnesota staff, have gotten together and worked on trying to find some commonalities on some of the issues that districts are going to be confronted with as the teacher evaluation bill rolls out here. And John Sylvester on our staff, who has done this for us, is actually at a training in central Minnesota today dealing with this very issue. So he would be the one to be presenting this today if that wasn't happening. But I think it's important to understand that it's kind of an age-old truism: you can't separate policy from finance. And with the state policy change that happened in 2011 with the teacher eval piece, I think as we get closer to that implementation stage, we're finding out that there's going to be some additional costs that go along with that in terms of implementing a robust, well-thought-out, well-planned research teacher evaluation plan. And I think it's also important to understand from a school board's perspective and a management perspective, an administrator's perspective, that grade evaluations matter. They are very important to our staff in terms of getting feedback and providing direct and quality instruction to our students. And so it's important to board members, it's important to administrators, principals, teachers, parents, all of those things, all of our customers who we provide service for. So I think as you see in this bill, I think the way I understand this piece is it's an assumption that all districts would fall into the statewide default model. And so I think that's really, it was hard to cost this piece out because, excuse me, because districts are in different places. I mean, there are some districts who already have a robust evaluation model that exists, but based on the requirements here, I think it's important to understand that the money here or the bill here provides that. And so I just want to lay out some of the issues that we see, some potential costs that we feel need to be funded. So first of all, the default plan requires that summative evaluators, those are the ones at the end of 3 years, be trained by MDE, which generates a district expense in terms of either providing release time or hiring substitutes or paying employees to work outside the basic day. And so that's one issue that we think is going to be an additional cost for districts. Secondly, the default plan requires peer review. The peer review meaning a staff member within the district would be trained to go out and do the formative evaluations. We believe that there needs to be some training for that piece as well. And thirdly, a default plan requires the use of student learning goals for those content areas where there are not MMRs or MCA 2s or 3s to use that data. And so those student learning goals would require some development and retention for districts, which would be an additional cost as well. The default plan requires teachers also to develop individual growth and development plans. A good thing, excuse me, we think over a three-year evaluation period, those things are going to need to be monitored not only by the peer reviewers, but also by the summative evaluators who do the evaluation at the end of the third year. Another item would be the default plan requires the use of student surveys. And we realize that this piece has not yet been developed. But if you are in a default state model, there will be a requirement for the department as well as the school districts to use a student survey, which will be a part of the teacher evaluation at the end of the day. But I think really the big major cost factor, and we've seen different tickets, different price tags that go along with this, is the assumption that we're moving to a ratio for 60 teachers to one summative evaluator. And I believe that the MMB assumed that there would be 80 teachers to one summative evaluator, and that's how they got their ticket. But we believe in conversations with Ed Minnesota that in order to do a quality job in terms of teacher evaluation, that number needed to be moved down to allow for a more rich evaluation than by the summative evaluator. And there will be some additional costs that go along with that if you look at moving that down for school districts. And so we're talking about time for teachers out of class, training for your peer evaluators as well. I think that the piece also that we are somewhat concerned about in terms of the cost, and this really demonstrates where districts are. Some districts have very solid PLCs, professional learning communities, in their districts. There are other districts that may not have those pieces. And one of the requirements also that comes along with this is the PLC requirements in the state default model. And how do you organize those? How do you structure those pieces at the elementary level, the middle school level, and the high school level? Now, we do know that there are pilot programs coming forward in the next year. I think one of the things that we also need to be mindful of is that once we get into those pilot programs, and though that data will be coming back to the department and districts at the summer of 2013, and already the summer of 2014, we're going to have to implement these. And so we're hopeful that the discussion as we proceed here is whether, I'm not suggesting we push this out, but look at ways that we aren't going to be building the airplane while we're flying. And I think that we're looking forward to that data that comes back from the pilot sites, whether it's the student surveys or the PLC data, whatever it might be, that can enhance the teacher evaluation system for us. So I think those pieces, first of all, the issues of revenue, training, for school districts are very important. And secondly is the implementation of this in 2014, is we need to be able to have that data from the pilot programs to make sure that we can improve the program as it moves forward. So I will end there and defer to Ms. Alschwager to talk from the teacher's perspective.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schneiderwind. Ms. Alschwager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschwager, Education Minnesota. And if you were in the legislature in 2011, you will recall that Education Minnesota is embracing teacher evaluation. Because why? We want quality teachers. We want the best teachers in the classroom. Education Minnesota wants to make sure that this teacher evaluation law that was passed works. And what our members want is a good system, a sound system that has integrity, that really means something, and that they can really trust. And I just passed out to you a document that actually is the law, because in order for you to really understand the bill that Representative Bernardi is bringing forward that needs to be funded, you need to take a look at the law. And we thank Representative Brainerd and Representative Brandon Peterson for their work on this. But frankly, there wasn't any money put into it. And the Department of Education, did you know this? The Department of Education had to go out and seek grants from the Bush Foundation and others in order to even start their work. There was no funding even for the Department of Education to put this process in place. So I commend the commissioner and her work in getting money to be able to start up this process. I highlighted in yellow the pieces that I generally thought required funding, because this isn't something that we can just add on at the end of the day. And I'd also like you to think about this. Some of you represent school districts in rural Minnesota. And if you ask who is your curriculum director in rural Minnesota, it might be the first grade teacher. Or if you ask who is your assessment coordinator, it might be the seventh grade teacher. If you ask who is your athletic director, it might be your high school social studies teacher. And on top of that, you know, we are making sure that all of our teachers and our administrators are up on all the standards. They're doing their very best to improve test scores. They are making sure that they are in tune with mental health needs of the kids. They're learning the latest reading strategies. They're learning the latest math strategies, all for student improvement and student achievement. Where is the time? Where is the ability for people to do one more thing? And I'll go back to what I said originally. Teachers want good evaluation. Did you know that in Minnesota, before this law was passed, the only requirement for evaluations were for probationary teachers. Probationary teachers had to be evaluated three times in each of the first 3 years of probation. Once they're offered their fourth contract, they're given continuing contract, or what people call tenure. At that point, there was nothing required in law that they had to be evaluated. Now, we could have just said, okay, there's going to be a requirement that teachers have to be evaluated from now on. But instead, we kind of laid out the process. And by laying out all this process and all of these yellow highlighted areas that I have on my handout, that costs money. And so now we have this law, and we want to make sure that it works. I have one more handout that I would like to share. And as I stated, Education Minnesota is really working hard to make sure that this works. So you can see the tremendous amount of staff time that we have put into building a teacher development and evaluation plan. This is all about quality. Our staff and working with MSBA and other organizations have put together a handbook to help our members understand what the teacher evaluation process is and how to have a very good plan. If you look at the back side of the first handout that I gave you, I really want you to look at 40.30. If a teacher is not performing to the standards that they're supposed to perform and they don't meet the goals and timelines, an administrator must discipline the teacher, and I won't read all of that. But this law has teeth. So in order to make sure that we have integrity and a good process, we need to make sure that we take our time, we put the funding in here, so that we can do all of the things that Mr. Schneiderwind talked about. I won't go through all of this because I know there's others to testify, but this shows you the commitment Education Minnesota has to building a quality teacher evaluation plan that should not be rushed, that should be funded, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Very good. We do have a couple questions for the testifier. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, actually, my question's for you. I was wondering if you could just give us some perspective on what teacher evaluations have looked like. We're certainly not starting, even though this was put into law in 2011 and it's being developed, we're not starting from zero. We're not starting at ground level. I'm sure schools already have evaluations taking place, and they're trying on an ongoing basis to have quality teachers in the classroom. Could you give us some perspective of where we are right now and what is already built into education funding? Thank you.
Representative Bernardi.
Okay, well, I'm going to put a caveat on this or a disclaimer. I'm not an expert in this area. I'm familiar with my school districts. In my school districts, it varies. And so that, I'm sure it's in your school district, I'm sure you've talked with your school districts and knowing what they do as well. But it ranges from formalized programs. It ranges to negotiated programs. It ranges to just left up to the administration, basically. So it's all over the board.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Myra.
Is there anyone else who could address that issue among the testifiers?
Ms. Salzweiger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Myra, I think Representative Bernardi did a very nice job. It varies, and we can't say what it looks like in one district, or even within one district, it looks different from building to building. And I want to make sure that I didn't give the wrong impression that teacher evaluations aren't happening.
Right. Well, I wanted to make sure that was on record.
Yeah. And so when you asked that question, I thought, I better correct that or make sure that people understand. Teacher evaluations are happening. In some buildings, they really aren't happening so much. And I don't want to say that it's happening everywhere. But we have some fabulous teacher evaluation programs out there. Moundsview, Osseo, all over the state, there are some fabulous programs. So some of them would say, well, we really didn't need this law because we were doing a really good job already. So you're going to find different attitudes about the teacher evaluation law that was passed because some think that they were doing a great job already and it gets a little too prescriptive. And then there are others are saying, well, this tells us what we have to do. And so we're going to work from scratch to build this program.
Anything, Representative Myra, anything more? Okay. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I won't get too involved. I have a lot of thoughts about this because I've been really close to the process and participated in the teacher evaluation committee for 13 months and so forth. But I wanted to comment a bit on Mr. Schneiderwin's context in terms of using the fallback model as the primary mechanism for determining the funding. And I understand the value of doing that in terms of giving context to the issue. But I also understand that I think we need a much more refined look, as Representative Myra indicated, at the range of what's going on in our school districts and how indeed they have supported these activities. Because you talked about PLCs, for instance, and I know some districts don't have them, but I come from a district that instituted them over 10 years ago, and we've supported and funded them, you know, in some manner, certainly. I can say how we did that, but I'm saying we did that internally, you know, within our own budget. And then you have a lot of the districts that are probably at the top of the game with teacher evaluation are QCOMP districts. So to look at maybe the difference between QCOMP districts, non-QCOMP districts, small districts, large districts, metro districts, outstate districts, I think there's really a grid that we're going to have to understand to truly understand where the cost factors are. And that may be part of what we try to do in the pilot phase. And the other piece I wanted to mention and maybe see what your reaction to this is, but the issue of the timeline, I don't think it's so problematic about when we start full bore, but I think the real issue is whether we attach high stakes consequences too closely to the full implementation. Because you can learn as you go, but the issue is whether there would be high stakes consequences. And so far we're not there, but I think there are those who might like to do that earlier than would be appropriate. But so that's my comment on the timeline.
Okay, Mr. Schneiderwin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Briner, and you are correct. I mean, I think that the challenge of trying to find a the exact cost of this was just that, is that you knew that there were districts were in different places at different times, and really the only solid way to do this is to look at that piece. But I totally agree, and I think it feeds into our testimony that we are at different places. And at different, we have the QCOM districts, non-QCOM districts. But I think that when you talk about the pieces of training teachers, training peer reviewers, summative evaluators, taking perhaps some of your lead teachers out of the classroom for half of a day to do peer evaluations, I think there's going to be cost to that. And I think that that's the important piece that we're trying to focus on here, is that it's not as simple as just moving one of your lead teachers out of the classroom. You've got to educate those kids, and that's the challenge for districts, I think. So,
very good. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, Mr. Chair, when do you want to discuss outside-the-box solutions?
Why don't we have the testifiers up here right now.
Okay.
So if you want to hold on to that, we can do that later.
Okay, I'll pass for the time.
Yeah, so if we can just kind of have the testifiers right. But we've got some, don't anyone leave quite yet, because I still have some other questions. Representative Quam, we'll keep you on the list, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Allswager, this goes into the testifier and the chair's desire for creative thinking. Since the union is so, for this and is active in this, I think one way it would help, because all the districts are so diverse, and I was thinking, where would there be a time when teachers from all across the state might be together? And so during the MEA might be a great time to do some of this training activity, and that way when you have the group, it's not a regional, it's a statewide diverse group of people, and I think you might have a better product out of that training if we did do some of this activity during that MEA time. And I was hoping to get some feedback from Ms. Allswager on this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I would say in virtually every time that we gather our members together, we have an opportunity to offer sessions, we are offering training on this, which is why we put this booklet together. We have fall drive-in meetings all over the state. We have legislative wrap-up meetings where we talk about this. We will have, in June, we will do it. And we have a summer seminar, which is a three-day program, where we will have an extensive offering of this. On the Education Minnesota days, no longer the MEA days, we also have extensive offerings on teacher evaluation. We have brought individuals in specifically for the purpose of training them. We have gone around the state regionally to train them on this. So we are doing that, I believe.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to hear that, because that would alleviate some of the substitute, teacher and some of the other expenses by utilizing this partnership with Education Minnesota, the Department of Education, and the districts. I think that will help with that. The other thing is, would the union be okay with, there are a lot of districts will have certified staff that don't teach in the classrooms. And with meeting with teachers in different districts, I often hear that the administrators don't understand the classroom that well, and there is some concern about their evaluation. So during the other times where it is during the school year and teachers would be going out to training, that if we had administrators and certified teachers that aren't in the classroom being part of, filling in as a substitute teachers, that would allow them to get time in front of the students and better understand the classrooms, the students, and the activities, so that when they do evaluations, that there, you know, you just that understanding, I think, would help. So I was wondering if Ms. Allswager and the union are open to that kind of an idea, which again would decrease, you know, some of the cost in funding this, and is out of the box, but would fill in part of this partnership between the districts and the union, because we all must come together to help, you know, ensure quality in the classroom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Klum, I'll try to keep my answers brief. To your first comment about the union holding meetings and trainings and would alleviate some of the work in the district, I really don't believe that would be the case. And the reason is this. In Byron, any training that I do or my colleague Jane Gillis does on this is giving information about various ideas, things that you can implement, what the law is, what it is not, giving them out-of-the-box ideas. But I should not be telling Byron School District how to do or implement their program. I think that's better conversation for the superintendent and the school board and the principals and the teachers in Byron to make those decisions. Then on the second level, the question that you asked about basically differentiated staffing and having people who are not licensed, you know, being in the classroom while the teachers are released. Well, our educators and teachers in the state are taking it very seriously, the test scores and meeting the standards, et cetera. They have to go through a rigorous process to be licensed and know what they are teaching. If we say that putting the kids with someone who is a very good person and possibly trained in managing kids, but maybe isn't licensed in how to teach science or math or elementary classes, then we are not putting a person who is of the highest quality in front of those kids, and we would say that we might be sacrificing real teaching time with those kids.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit confused because I didn't know that when substitute teachers are hired that they are required to be certified in that specific, if they're covering for a sick day and others, that they just be certified. I remember from Zed there was even a program cooperative with the Department of Education to train professionals that had experience and, you know, to fill in with the substitute teacher group. And I apologize for not having the specifics on that. So I do think there's some flexibility, but in this bill there are many training, back to the first response, there are many training aspects that I think are pretty universal. And especially if you, like I said before, cooperate with the Department of Education, there could be some very good general training and again, cross-pollinate, because I'm sure that there's very good attendance at these events, so that we would actually have a better quality training on some of the general aspects. Of course, in district, you're going to have some specific training, but we must all come together to ensure this quality in the classroom.
Representative Van Zyl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. members, I really try hard to stay away from allowing my own personal experiences and biases interfere with our job here with regard to education. But Representative Klum, I'm one of those substitute teachers. As recently as a week ago. And I enjoy it. And it keeps me grounded. And every time I get called to sub, and then I come back to this committee, I'll admit to you, I come back in a very bad mood.
know.
And I think with, you know, all candor and respect for all of you, and you're doing your jobs and representing your districts and kids and parents and everybody with due diligence and everything else, I think you understand that. And I have so much to say about this evaluation piece. I'm probably prepared to raise the revenue to fund teacher evaluation, to reality test what we've been discussing for a couple years here. I'm ready to do that. You need to be ready to do that too. Because, of course, without adequate funding, we've got another mess. And lastly, just to top this off a little bit, really and truly, we ought to develop a way for all of us to spend the day, at least one day, with a teacher in a school setting. You know the old adage, you have to walk in somebody's moccasins for a while until you can make judgments. Well, that is really, really, really the case here. And I would caution you, and I would challenge you to step up and find the resources to do this, or else let's get off this and let's spend time on more productive things which can really deal with the achievement gap in a more relevant way. So sorry to take up your time with that, but that, you know, after a while you have to have feelings here.
Thank you very much, Representative Ansel. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, I was wondering if you have any information about other states and teacher evaluation costs that are experienced in other states that have already implemented something of the same nature. Do you have any information on that?
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have what other states are doing. I know we like a lot of local control in Minnesota. It's something different, but we have QComp here in Minnesota, and we know that it's costing around between levy and aid. School districts can get about $260 per pupil. So that's probably the closest comparison that's very relevant to what's experienced in Minnesota. And I do want to answer your last question. I do have some examples of what's happening in Minnesota, and it'd be really great if we could move to our testifiers at some point when you're ready to do that.
Very good. Anything further? Representative Myra is the last question here before we head to the next testifier.
Mr. Chair, trying to figure this out, and I am supportive of funding this, but to try to get a really good handle on it, that is what I'm trying to do. And the reason for my questions of how much has been spent before and how where are we on the continuum and what other states are doing. Is there any information that Mr. Strom could provide? Is there anything that we have available?
Or potentially
Thank
even
you.
The department may. Does the department have some information on that? I see Ms. Hermanson.
And Mr. Chair, while we're
Representative
waiting,
Bernardi.
While we're waiting for that person to come down, I do want to say, for example, in Anoka Hennepin, they do QComp. And about 65% of the dollars go into the incentive program, I believe, and 35% of the cost goes into administering the program, and I can verify that. So if it's about $260 for QComp, you're looking at about $120 in actual cost to the systemizing and institutionalizing the program.
Very good. Well, we'll let the department come forward. Let's see if we can. So,
Mr.
welcome.
Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Education. Another one of my working groups is working with teacher and principal evaluation. We have attempted to find this information out from other states, and it's been quite difficult for a variety of reasons. And we have asked Several of the states that are further along in implementation had raced to the top dollars. And much of what they were doing around teacher evaluation was built in. And even when we tried to get clear numbers about implementation, we weren't able to do so. We're continuing to pursue that. We also find that our law is different than their laws. Ours is more embedded in statute. Other states are not necessarily a statutory requirement. It's either implemented because they have race to the top dollars and they're combining it with other things that they're doing, or it may be implemented by the State Board of Education, or it may be implemented in a different way. So as we try to do comparisons, what we had to do was look at each of our components similarly to what's in this bill and attempt to ferret out what are the cost factors. Actually, the closest thing that we have is really QComp and what's involved there. And we did go within our agency and look at the QComp funding and made some parallel judgments. But again, there are some additional requirements in this law that are not necessarily part of QComp. So we, part of what we had hoped to do under piloting was to help us figure out, and you got to realize our model, which is the basis of this, we had to design a model, a default model, that would work in every situation. Every situation that would cover a teacher that's under the continuing contract law. And that includes small districts, bigger districts, cooperatives. There's a wide variety of districts, and they have all different structures. And so our model is probably more extensive in some ways, because our goal was to hope that districts take this model and use it, being in compliance with the law, for what's going on in their districts. Some districts have substantially more probationary teachers, which will require additional evaluation. So it will vary, but it's also, at this point, fairly difficult to determine. We sat down with companies that want to deal with us on value added. Technically, the department does not have value added data. We have growth and Z score growth, but we don't have value added. So we are trying to find out what those cost factors are as we go forward with the details that are in our statute. But the short answer is we've not gotten clear information from other states about what their cost factors are.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Hermanson. That was helpful. Okay. Let's listen to the testifiers, and then we'll come back for more questions. So, Representative Bernardi, who do you have next?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have two different representatives from our state. We have one from the metro area, which is from Moundsview Schools, and that's Sharon Chelberg. And then we also have Tom Ames, who, Mr. Ames, is from Truman Public Schools and Parker's Prairie. So I'd like to let them share their testimony.
Ms. Chelberg.
One's a teacher and one's an administrator.
Good morning.
Good. Welcome.
Chairperson and committee members. My name is Sharon Chelberg. I am from the Moundsview District, and I have been there over 40 years. So I have watched a lot of evaluation systems come and go. Although in my district, for the last 20 years, we have worked with the administration as teachers to try to get an evaluation system that is workable from all sides. That being said, in my local, we were really quite happy to see this bill and this evaluation system come to fruition. It has a lot of things in there that we feel are going to be good for teachers, good to help us keep quality teachers in the classroom. There are a lot of pieces, though, to it. And as we started to look at what we were going to do, we actually used this booklet for our committee that's working on the setting up our evaluation system, appraisal system for our local. With the district, we use this as sort of the Bible, because it's really in clear language and it explains a lot about what we had to do and what we had to look at and how we were going to set this all up. So, from our point of view as teachers, we want a consistent program that's fair, that has a level playing field for everybody, where the evaluators are trained so they know what they're supposed to be looking for when they go into a classroom. My district has 13 sites, not including all the little smaller sites for some of the programs that we have for early childhood and so forth. And our principals, who are now doing evaluation, are not all trained at the same level, and they have varying abilities. I'm trying to be very polite about this, in their ability to evaluate what's going on in a classroom. We really feel that once we have our setup for Moundsview, there will be we're going to have rubrics. We're going to have, but we need to train people in order to use the rubrics, and we have to do all that sort of thing. So we're looking forward to having a quality system for our teachers that everybody will be appraised on the same level playing field, and if there are needs for teachers, that there will be opportunities for staff development to bring their skills up. Last year, this current school year, we had 80 new teachers in Moundsview out of 700 teachers. And so there was a lot of work to be done in appraising and evaluating those new teachers, so much so that the district had to bring in a retired principal to help do evaluation. So, you know, there's a lot of different things going on in our district, a lot of different types of teachers. And so we really do want to have something that's available for everyone, and everybody knows how they're going to be appraised, and everybody knows what's going on, and it's very consistent from building to building.
Is that good? Okay.
Thank
you. Yep. Ms. Shelbert, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Ames.
I'm Tom Ames. I'm the superintendent, halftime superintendent in Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, and I'm also the halftime superintendent in Truman, Minnesota. Prior to that, I was the longest-serving school superintendent in the same district, 28 years in St. Charles. Started out as an administrator in little old Wyckoff, Minnesota, and my wife and I taught in Australia for 4.5 years. Been in the parochial system, been in the public system. I'm proud to say in my 28 years as superintendent in St. Charles, I was in the classroom on average 2 hours a day teaching. So I've kept a foot in the classroom. It was the highlight of my day. I believe in quality teaching. I believe in quality teachers. I think it's a challenging job. I think as a state and a nation, we need to put a focus on that. I have some reservations regarding the state-mandated teacher evaluation system. I think there are some positive components to it also. I'm concerned about how it's going to be implemented down on the ground, particularly in small rural districts. Yesterday morning, I was contacted by Kirk at MSBA to come up here to testify. My day to be in Parker's Prairie today. So I did not drive the 190 miles up there, but I did call both principals in the office and say, hey, is it okay if I'm not in Parker's this morning? Darla Harstead is the elementary principal, one of the finest educators I've ever worked with. She returned my phone call several hours later. At 5 minutes to 6, she was still in her office working. She said, you know, Tom, it's got to be that time of the year, and the fact that we've still got 3 feet of snow in Parker's Prairie, but they were lined up out my door. She wears multiple hats, as does Carrie Johnson, the Parker's Prairie High School principal, as does Tate Jerome, the K through 12 principal in Truman. These people are air traffic controllers. They're working hard. I walked in Darla's office 2 weeks ago, and there was a young man, second grader, sitting at a table. I said, how's your day today? He said, not good. I said, what's the matter? He said, I got in trouble on the bus. Later on, I asked Darla about this young man. She said, Tom, it's the dead of winter, and they don't even have electricity in his house. He's got some mental health issues. You've got principals who are dealing with families with challenges in terms of getting the electricity turned on, to dealing with students who have learning difficulties, ESL learners, an increasing special ed population, and at the same time declining resources because of declining enrollment. We don't have a social worker in Truman or Parker's Prairie. We don't have a guidance counselor in Truman or Parker's Prairie. The principal does all that. And they're darn dedicated. My concern, what part of Mrs. Harstead's 13-hour day are we going to take out for her to attend to additional responsibilities? Or will we be hiring additional coaches or evaluators, and maybe we can cut back on one of the kindergarten teachers? These are tough choices. Very tough choice. So I have concerns. I believe in quality teaching. I worked hard at teaching myself. I consider myself to be a student of pedagogy. I think that great teachers prep hard. They're there before school and after school. I think that principals need to be less evaluators and more coaches. Building a trust relationship with teachers, having the knowledge and expertise to move learning forward. They also need a strong backbone, because you know what? Not everybody should be a teacher. You need to weed out some folks, probationary and tenured, and that's a tough job. So my hat goes off to principals. My hat goes off to teachers. My hat goes off to Education Minnesota, because I think they are committed to teaching and learning. And I think every country internationally that scores high, for example, on the PISA test, has strong teacher unions. It's time to stop bashing them. But let's get down to working on something that is going to move the quality of instruction forward for the kids in this state. Many of our principals are not equipped. Not their fault. They are not equipped to go in that classroom and provide the coaching expertise to move things forward. That's going to require some training, leadership on the part of the Minnesota Department of Education. I called the Department of Education yesterday. Audrey Baumgartner. First, I called Tom Melcher. He said, she's so busy, her voice message system is full. And sure enough, it was. Couldn't even leave a voice message. Looking at a capital projects levy. We need to have the leadership. They need to have the resources. The school districts need to have the resources to increase the expertise among the teaching staff and the administrative staff in the field with kids today in this economy. Many educators and systems are stretched. To add more things without more resources, without thoughtful leadership and a strategic plan, not to evaluate people so much, but to help them improve their performance, because that's what's going to make a difference for kids. That's the end of my sermon.
Mr. Ames, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Given us a lot to think about and a great perspective. Any questions for either one of these testifiers? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ames, would it, and I'd have one district that, well, my old district, it was there. I think I might still have a few people attend that district. But they have had in the last 10 years a good 30-40% decline in enrollment. And, you know, I know there are other districts that have that. Could you help come up with language to, it'd be nice if the Department of Education could facilitate some positions to go and help out with the smaller districts that don't have the critical mass or the bandwidth to have people come and say, like you said, come in and take some of that weight off to implement this or assist in this process. So that way, and you're a good example, you're part-time at this district, part-time at that, well, you know, because you don't have the critical mass. Well, you can be more efficient and effective maybe if the Department of Ed has some of that and can spread it across several districts. Is that something you think would make it easier and more efficient and effective to implement this program?
I think it's true that if you provided to districts some outside professionals who are trained in what we're talking about, teacher supervision and coaching, that would certainly help. I think the answer to it, though, is if you take a look at Finland, the highest scoring nation or one of the highest scoring nations in the world on the PISA test, about the size of Minnesota. They have many, many small schools. How do they do it? They invest heavily in selecting teachers. Only 10% get into the university programs. They provide training. You cannot teach without a master's degree. So they invest up front. And that's where I think the resources ought to go, because you have limited resources. Not that that wouldn't be helpful. The principal programs, very uneven in terms of training regarding pedagogy and supervision. Let's invest in those. Let's do a Finland. Let's invest in people. Let's be extremely selective. Let's get that base teaching salary up there. Probably every teacher needs an increase. But when you have, in Truman, Minnesota right now, an opening for English, starting salary $32,000, people coming out of school with $40,000, $50,000 in college debt, we have a tough time bringing in that quality person to do that job. We've got to think about that kind of problem the same way that Finland's thought about it. The kids in Frostbite Falls are just as entitled to a quality teacher as those in Edina.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to take an opportunity with Mr. Ames' expertise here to ask a couple of questions of, if you don't mind. I appreciate your testimony. One is that, you know, you made a lot of statements about quality teachers, and we certainly have a lot of conversations about that around here. It could be a difficult definition of what a quality teacher is, and that you know, creates a lot of angst as well as we try to figure that out. But today, you know, I guess I'm a little bit confused by what the role of principals and superintendents are. And I understand that there's a lot going on there. You mentioned some of the things that your principals are involved in, that you're involved in. But if quality teachers are that important, aren't they doing some sort of evaluation today? I mean, are you aware of who your quality teachers are and who need additional help today?
Mr. Ames?
That is true. And there is teacher supervision and evaluation going on. What we're talking about is compliance with the state-mandated law, which is going to require additional efforts. Right now, we don't have, to a large extent, peer review going on. We would need to train those peer reviewers or peer coaches. We'd have to take a look at longitudinal data in a way that's different than we've been doing that. But we certainly have principals working with teachers along with all the other requirements of their busy day.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I appreciate that. I think that's a start. What in the law then? I mean, we talk a lot about mentoring. I mean, Education Minnesota, is part of their goals is that they mentor teachers as well. We have staff development trainings. We do all these things that kind of lead up to quality teachers and evaluating whether or not those teachers are quality teachers and should be in the classroom or maybe need to be in a different career or, you know, in a different classroom, even a different class setting. All those things are happening today. And I know that, you know, when Education Minnesota testified on this bill a couple of years ago, one of the things they said was exactly what you said. We don't want the state to tell us. We want it to be local. And that's why some of the language says you develop it locally, and as long as it meets a couple of those criteria, including the peer evaluation, your program is sufficient and meets what we're looking for. So, you know, a peer evaluation, is that that onerous of a task for things that are probably going on today? I guess I want to be careful that we're not sort of creating these new categories on stuff that is already happening, and that all it is a different name change. And we know that peer evaluations are happening because you're mentoring. And you know, my wife is a principal. So, you know, while I have been a substitute teacher and, you know, I'm with her 365 days a year almost, I understand where she comes from as a principal, you know, and how she evaluates teachers. And she's in there, and teachers are evaluating each other. And you've got these PLCs. There's all these things happening that meet the criteria today of what this law was trying to implement. So I just want to be careful that we're not creating new vernacular, maybe, that is creating additional, you know, impetus upon this that doesn't need to be there. So any comments that you might have on, you know, on what's happening today that already meets this criteria versus what you may think we are trying to get at under this law?
Mr. Ames.
I think that your wife and the program that she has going on in her school is the model for us all to be able to engage teachers, working with other teachers, to be an educational leader herself, to have the expertise to go in and supervise the classroom. I want to make sure that I would hope that all schools in Minnesota would be equipped the same way as the school you just described. Teacher supervision, coaching. Coaching is much more important than evaluation. Minnesota Twins, a lot of us are worried about their pitching staff. Would giving everybody a comprehensive scoreboard evaluation fix that?
No.
Better get in there, pitching coaches. Work on that slider. Work on that outside curveball. It's that day-to-day, brick-by-brick, roll-up-your-sleeves coaching, the trust between the pitching coach and the pitchers that moves it forward. That's what we're after. New York Times this weekend, interesting article on state-mandated teacher evaluation. Some of you probably read it. Florida, Tennessee, Michigan, they've got it. 98% and 99% of the teachers are rated as very satisfactory or excellent. It's caused some people to pause with their statewide systems.
That's right.
And Mr.
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, and I'm done. I just wanted to, for the record, agree with Mr. Ames that Mrs. Woodard is a saint. And right. Those are very good jobs. I just want to be on record.
Very good.
I guess, could I ask a question of you?
I don't know if that's...
You substitute
teach? I don't know what the question is.
Well, I was very concerned, Representative Ansel. At one time, I was a substitute teacher, too, and I used to get angry like you do. How about you?
Well, I, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Ames, I had substitute taught right out of college, and then now I'm also an adjunct professor at St. Mary's University. So I do some substitute at the higher ed level as well and get the same frustration. And I think probably, although it's out of the purview of this committee, you want to talk about some variations in how people teach and their backgrounds and everything else. Higher ed certainly has maybe even more issues than K-12 on that front.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Are there anyone else in the audience? Thank you so much. Anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Otherwise, I want to go to this thinking outside the box a few minutes on that. So anyone else would care to testify for or against? All right, Mr. Ames and Ms. Shelberg, thank you so much. Representative Grunhagen, you can think outside the box now.
Sometimes I think I was born outside the box, to get the truth. But anyway, Yeah, I just, you know, with my background experience, I did watch the teacher evaluation process in my local district, and I did come up with a teacher evaluation process. This process would maximize teacher freedom in the classroom rather than try to micromanage teachers, which has been done on and off for how many decades to the misery of most good teachers. It would also keep the dollars in the classroom. You would not have to hire substitutes or evaluators or do much additional training. Does anybody like the idea so far? Basically, what it's an objective standard and measurable. It simply states this. It says at the beginning of the year, the teacher will do an academic assessment of the students in their classroom, okay, some type of a test to see where they're at academically. At the end of the year, you do another assessment test. Now, maybe you can use an existing test because I know we're tested into oblivion sometimes. But at the end of the year, we need to see improvement from where those students were at. Regardless if they were at the lower end of the bell curve or at the higher end, there should be a minimum, on average, a 10% increase in their academic knowledge after 1 year in the classroom. If there isn't, okay, then the teacher receives a 5% penalty on their paycheck, all right? And if they, 3 years in a row, do not meet a 10% increase in academic knowledge for those students in their classroom, they are subject to termination. End of problem. No bureaucracy. You don't need evaluators, substitute teachers, all this other stuff. You have an objective standard, and I tell you what, this is what's used in the insurance industry as an agent, okay? They offer me help. They give me requirements. If I don't meet those requirements with a particular company, guess what? They don't care what I've done. They terminate me, okay? And which is one of the reasons I ran for office today. No, just kidding. No, the you need something objective that maximizes teacher freedom and keeps the dollars in the classroom. As we heard from Superintendent Ames, this is unworkable in most situations in rural school districts because of the tightness of financially. Finally, I'd like to add this. I've seen the evaluation process used as a punishing method for teachers who will not cooperate with the agenda of the educational bureaucracy. And I'm talking about outcome-based education. I'm talking about profile learning. If you don't get with the agenda, which we don't know whether it works or not, and 9 times out of 10, it doesn't, okay? And the teacher knows it won't work, but they're being forced or coerced to go along with the agenda through the evaluation process. And I give you specific examples where administrators tried to punish teachers, okay, because they wouldn't cooperate with teaching whole language, and they had bought their own materials to teach phonics to the children, and they didn't want that taught. But, you know, I can say that for another time. But anyway, the point is, this evaluation process needs vetting, but it's objective, and you don't need to spend millions of dollars, and you're going to get higher academic results, and you're going to shrink the academic gap between minorities and Caucasian students. End of presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just wanted to respond briefly to Representative Gernhagen's position. I would say that's the essence of the debate we undertook as a legislature in 2011 around what role testing should play in teacher evaluation, and what do we know from research and data about the ability to objectively measure that 10% increase in student achievement. And this was the compromise result. It has a component in it, lines 40.18, that addresses those test measures, value-added assessment. And you heard earlier, I think, discussion about student learning goals, which is a way to give classrooms that don't have, you know, MCA scores, et cetera, some pre-test, post-test measure. But all the research and every assessment director and that was involved in this discussion said the date you need a test that's been vetted that has psychometric, you know, objectivity and that has 3 years of data to assure that it can be used to give an accurate value-added measure. And even then, it should be one measure among others. And that's what we've tried to achieve here is a multiple measures frame. So I think we're taking into account your point of view, but not being reductionistic about allowing the whole weight of the teacher evaluation to be determined by a single test.
Mr. Chair?
I think we're going to go to Representative Hertaus and make sure he gets Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if Mr. Representative Grunhagen would tell me how he really feels on this. I appreciate the testimony that Mr. Ames gave, and I would add that I'm a taxpayer in his district as well and support many school districts around the state. But nonetheless, I think it shows some of the wisdom of those smaller districts and people who have to wear a lot of hats. And I can tell you that in the private sector currently in Minnesota, there's probably about 33% to 34% of all trades or professions now require a license in order to practice your trade or profession. With that comes oftentimes a lot of state mandates about what you have to do to maintain that license. And there's an incredible amount of redundancy over and over and over again, the same stuff, the same material. And frankly, I don't think we should be micromanaging these things from the state level, and I favor giving greater control over teacher evaluations to the local district and let them figure out the best way to do it. So I just wanted to offer that.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to remind Mr. Ames that we have teacher and principal evaluation because the state wanted a waiver. So that's number one. Number two, we have this particular proposal in law because Education Minnesota wanted it. So just so you know that for background. But, Mr. Chair and Committee, I want to salute Representative Breinert and her work on the teacher evaluation working group because she did exceptional work in following the proposal that we adopted, which was her original bill. But her work and the work of the working group has really resulted in an excellent draft for school districts to use. I shared it with my superintendents over the holiday, asked some of them if they wanted to be a pilot, perhaps. I'm not sure if they're willing to go there, but I showed them the various parts of the teacher evaluation state model that they could piggyback on or they could incorporate into what they're already using, because they all reminded me that they already do teacher evaluation. And so there are parts that I would hope would comfort Mr. Ames in knowing that if your teachers read through the state model, there are parts of it that I think they would find very comforting because the groundwork has been established. And this working group really did very good work. I think Rose is gone, but she led that group. But Representative Breinert was a mainstay in getting us to where we are. So I think in the end, we're going to groan a little bit. Yes, we need to fund teacher evaluation. We said that from the get-go, but that was not part of the governor's initial request. The request was that we have evaluations in place so the state could get the waiver, and we moved forward in that way. But we have even a value-added piece that this group has worked on. I'm not sure, Representative Breinert, if you've been working on that, but it's laying the groundwork again for a way to fulfill what is indicated in line 40.18, the value-added assessment, and the fact, you know, that locals are going to design this so it'll fit their needs. So the department is working hard on that value added and trying to give examples of how this could be used. They've used the oak tree as their model and the growth of an oak tree and what affects its growth. So we have lots to look forward to, and I'm very positive about the work that has been done and what will happen in the field. I would like to have been a part of this, and maybe someday I'll be one of these evaluators. But I would have welcomed this local design of a teacher evaluation based on the premises set down in House File 26 as a way to improve my skills, to improve my teaching in my classroom, and most of all to ensure that my students were learning. And so I think we have to reflect on good work that's been done look forward to I think a positive result from the teacher evaluation and the principal evaluation, and the fact that I think our districts will find ways to work this out with a little additional funding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to go to Representative Ann Zelk, and then there's a Mr. Christensen who would like to testify, and then we'll go back to the author here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for recognizing me a second time here. First of all, I have to challenge the notion that it was Education Minnesota that led the effort in 11 to do this monstrosity without funding. My recollection was that it was driven primarily by the employer community. The organizations representing employers, the Minnesota Business Partnership, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I remember my displeasure. No, not displeasure. I wouldn't say that. My angst. That's a really good word. My angst at how it could be that as we left the classroom, the further we got away from the classroom, the stronger the impetus for the support of House File 26 became. And I wondered about that. So I believe the state's teachers, the state's administrators, school boards, superintendents realize, of course, that there has to be a evaluation program with rigor, but one that is funded. This monstrosity, micromanaging districts in St. Charles and Greenway, is not funded. So I hope I set the record straight.
we're going to listen to Mr. Christensen, and we'll see what we have time for. We still have one.
Well, Mr. Chair, I need to rebut.
He did.
And I think you know.
Absolutely. Mr. Christensen, welcome.
Chair Mark, what members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this bill, and I'm going to speak very directly to the bill and the aid part of this bill. I'm not going to get into the discussions you all have been having about the merits of the overall evaluation system, but specifically to the bill and its intent to provide some funding to help implement what's already in law. I am John Christensen. I'm superintendent of the Intermediate District 917. I'm here representing the intermediate districts, and we're here supporting this bill because it uses a methodology that we feel attends to our particular needs and all district needs in a way different than the QCOMP funding does, in that it is allocating funds or attempting to allocate funds on a per-teacher basis. In the intermediate districts, we have a rather unique situation in that we work with the most handicapped students of our member districts, and our staff to student ratios are very low because of the needs that they have. And so on a per pupil funding ratios are very low because of the needs that they have. And so on a per pupil funding mechanism, the amount of dollars that we might be able to receive to help implement the evaluation system is much less than if we were a typical K-12 district, because our staffing is much higher compared to our enrollment in those particular special education programs. Also, a rather unique thing in our situation is our career and tech programming. Our staff for our career and tech programming do not have their students counted in any kind of student count for our particular organizations. They're resident students of their high school districts. They come to us for a part of their day. Our teachers teach the programming that they have for them and help make their progress. But they would not be calculated into the current QCOMP formula, which is on a per pupil basis, because those pupils are a part of their resident district, not counted in our districts. So I'm here to support this bill from a standpoint of funding the implementation of the teacher evaluation system and to fund it on a per-teacher basis rather than a per-student basis. So that's my pitch today. I'd like that to be considered. It's a technical issue, and if we can talk QComp someday, we might want to talk about how we fund that too. So.
Mr. Christensen, thank you so much. I'm going to go back to Representative Erickson, since Representative Enzel referred to her comments.
Mr. Chair. I just needed to remind Representative Enzel that the governor vetoed the bill that was the proposal from the business community, so that did not play in special session. It was the Brainerd language that Education Minnesota's Tom Dewar had praised, and so that was the agreement we came to.
Representative Grunhagen, then we're going to go to the author.
Yeah, just one quick response. You know, when we look at this teacher evaluation and the tightness of budgets across the state, I think you need to start with two basic premises on whatever your solution is. Number one, how do I not drain more money out of the classroom? How do I keep the teacher in the classroom and assess her objectively? My plan does both of that. Every other plan drains money, needs additional funding, and convolutes the system. So I just wanted to add those things.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on Representative Erickson talk, reflecting, you know, on this law, and I think it would be good for Mr. Schneiderwind to comment, reflect on what they think some of the costs would cost for this bill.
Mr. Schneiderwind?
Mr. Chair, and I think, I highlighted some of those pieces today, and I thought we were kind of under more time constraints, so I didn't get into those, but the numbers that we have worked with Ed Minnesota and MSBA, looking at the fact that districts and teachers would perhaps not reach a joint agreement. So remember, right now under this proposal, the teachers and the board have to have a joint agreement to do a local assessment. Assuming that doesn't happen, there's a fly in the ointment, whatever may happen, then they kick into the default plan. And so that's what they have based this on. And so it may not be 100% accurate, but I think it gives you a little bit of an idea in terms of what perhaps costs we're talking about. And I talked about the release time for teachers. I talked about the training time for peer reviewers, the peer review release time, the establishment of PLCs. And you add all of those pieces up, because when you're talking about release time, training time, all of that is a cost for districts. And so I think it's important to understand that the number that they talked about when they talked about everybody going to a default plan was $289 million a year. Now, I had to sit down as well when that number first came out, but I think it highlights the importance of perhaps, rather than the low mark of $80 million that the MMB came out with, looking at a higher teacher evaluator model ratio, you're looking at some serious time here in terms of training your peer reviewers, training your principals, training your for release time, and so it's something that I think needs to be considered as you move forward.
Thank you very much. Representative Bernardi, last words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've been very generous with your time and with questions and conversations today, so I want to thank you for that, and I hope that we continue this and come up with a solution, and hopefully we'll make lots of good progress on teacher development and evaluation moving forward. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, and you'll renew House File 1643, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for the debate. Very good. Representative Selzer, you're up next. House File 1385, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that 1385 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing my bill this morning, which will enable a number of our youngest learners, ages 16 months to 4 years, from low-income families, get a great start through the expansion of the very successful parent-child home program implemented in the suburban area by JF&CS. This bill proposes to expand the PCHP program to the Way to Grow organization in Minneapolis and the Northland Area Family Service Center, which serves the cities of Raymer, Longville, Outing, Boy River, Federal Dam, and Swatara in Greater Minnesota. You should have in your folders materials outlining the good work of Way to Grow and the Northland Area Family Service Center, as well as material detailing longitudinal studies showing the proven success of the PHCP program over time. This bill clearly supports the goals we in the Education Finance Committee set for ourselves at the beginning of the legislative session, including closing the achievement gap, funding research-based programming, and equity in educational opportunity. This bill is also supported by the Minnesota Department of Education, in particular Commissioner Castilia, for its proven track record of success in giving disadvantaged children and families a hand up. You see in the bill that the appropriation amount is left blank, but we are asking for a total appropriation of $750,000 to be divided equally among the suburban, urban, and rural locations over 2 years. The cost to provide PCHP to each family is about $4,000 per year, which is seen as a good value, particularly since future children also benefit from the skills and competence parents acquire through their participation. Art Rolnick, as we all know, has done a lot for family, early childhood education and thinks highly of the program. We received a letter of support in your materials. Also speaking in support of this bill today, we have Mari Gorbush from JF&CS and Carolyn Smallwood from Way to Grow. And Mr. Chair, would you like them to testify?
You bet. Please, if they'd like to do so, yes. Please proceed.
Thank you very Welcome. Much, Chairman Marquardt and members of the committee for hearing our testimony this morning. I'm Mari Forbush. I'm the COO at Jewish Family and Children's Service. I'll just say a tiny bit about our organization. We are a large social service organization offering more than 30 programs and services to citizens in western Hennepin County. Last year we served about 16,000 people, and just a little over half of them were not Jewish. Some of our programs serves almost no Jewish people. Parent-child home program is that one of those programs. We have served one Jewish family since we began the program 7 years ago. And I'll just say briefly a little bit about the parent-child home program. It was begun in 1965, so it has 45 years of evidence-based proven success working with families of children. We brought this, families and children, we brought it to our community because we had a school-based program in St. Louis Park where we were serving at-risk families beginning in kindergarten, and we realized that that was too late and we needed to intervene with families earlier. And we started looking for a program, and we came across this program and saw the tremendous success that it had had, the relatively reasonable cost, and the outcomes that our children who participate in this program graduate from high school at the same rate as their middle-class peers. They are families who are educationally and economically disadvantaged, and the program offers 2 home visits a week for 30 weeks a year and brings educational books and toys into the home. Many times they're the first book that has been in that home, and it trains parents to be their child's first and best educator. It also teaches families to take advantage of resources in the community, such as the library, and it leaves those educational books and toys in the home. Models interacting with your child around that program in the first visit, and then the second visit, the home visitor watches the parent do the same thing and coaches them. I love this program. I turn around and talk to people about it in the grocery store line, because I believe that it would change the face of Minnesota if we were able to give it to every child who needed it in this country, in the state. And we are seeing our graduates move into kindergarten, first and second grade. We don't have any graduates yet in third grade, and we're in the process of gathering their kindergarten testing information. We have lots of anecdotal information, and the kids go into school as superstars. and they say, you know, what happened to this kid? How they're so ready for school. They learn to attend. They know their numbers, their letters, they know how to interact with they know how to sit quietly and listen. All those things that are so important. And I do believe that this will address the achievement gap by addressing the preparation gap. I also want to say that we're very happy to be working with Way to Grow. We have a long history of collaboration with them, and they're a great organization. And also, we have been speaking with the folks at Northland and are excited to be working with them as well.
Thank you so much. Please, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
For having me here. I'm Carolyn Smallwood, and I am the executive director / president of an organization called Way to Grow. I also sat on the Governor's Council of Early Education, so I'm honored to do that. Very passionate about early education and K through third education, and very excited to be partnering with the Jewish Family Services. Meyer is actually correct. We must start early. Way to Grow has been in this home visiting business since 1989. We've seen phenomenal results by working with families early on, from birth all the way to grade 3. This PCH program would allow us as an organization to continue focusing on our younger children that need the help. We also believe that the parent is the primary educator of the child. Imagine, you know, going into a home day by day and finding that a parent or a child cannot afford books. We see this all the time. Okay, imagine a mom with 4 or 5 kids trying to feed her child but don't have time or the tools or the education to sit down and read and prepare their kids for school. This initiative, this program, would allow more resources in the North and South Minneapolis area. The reason why I'm sitting here is because a couple of things. Number one, I know the achievement gap can be narrowed with intensive home visiting. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but it does cost a lot of money to send a child to juvenile detention and to prison. Okay? She indicated that it costs $4,000 to $5,000 per year. Okay, per family, to provide the necessary tools for that child to be ready to enter school. We're seeing phenomenal results. Those kids are going in school not only prepared, but top of the class, reading at or above grade level. Parents are beginning to participate with their child at parent-teachers conferences because we're giving them hope. We're giving them dignity. Some people believe that, you know, starting early doesn't matter and that a lot of parents should already know this stuff. That's not true. When you're inundated with life circumstances, social and emotional issues that are going on at home, trying to survive, working multiple jobs, a lot of our parents work multiple jobs, not one job. They're considered the working poor. And they have not been given the same chance. So I think this program would allow us to level the playing field, really level the playing field, and to have a significant impact.
Thank you so much. You. We've got three questions here, if we could keep them very quick. Representative Myra, we're running out of time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seltzer, you and I have spoken on this topic on a number of occasions, and you know I'm very supportive of this. However, recently I have had a bit of pushback, and I was wondering if you might be able to address some of the concerns I've been hearing, or maybe one of your testifiers. Actually, there are two concerns. One is a real strong concern about data collection during the home visits, and I just would like to comment on that, and then also on what's really important to me is that visits, since it is in a person's home, that it be voluntary. And if you could comment on, does a person select to participate, or is it something that is required of them by their pediatrician? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, members.
Representative Seltzer.
Representative Myra, if I could defer to my expertise.
And if we make these answers very, very quick, we're really running out of time.
First of all, the voluntary piece, the first year of the program when we had 20 families, now we're serving 115, our coordinator went around to WIC, Cub, laundromats. She walked through neighborhoods and talked to people and recruited the 20 families we needed, and now we have a waiting list. We do no advertising. We do no recruiting. And I'm not quite sure I understand your question about data collection.
Representative Myra?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have heard comments from a number of people where information is collected about the home family, the relationships, the physical conditions, their interactions between, and then this information is reported both on state and federal levels. I don't know about this, and that's why I'm just wanting to inquire of you and that information.
That is not part of the data that we collect. We do pre-testing and post-testing, educational testing only. Sometimes there are concerns brought with the family to the home visitor, and that goes to our coordinator who deals with that. The home visitors just do home visiting. Several of our home visitors are also graduates of the program.
Representative Wills.
I can answer part of that question about data collection.
Go ahead.
Just real quick to add on to what Myra is saying. Essentially, what we do is we have our family sign a data privacy rule. We do not collect data as far as their lifestyle and et cetera. We strictly are focusing on academics and et cetera.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to thank you for bringing forward this program. I think it's excellent. The parents should be the first and best teacher and most important teacher. And I was just wondering, a comment that was made, I missed your name, with the Jewish Family Services. You mentioned about the hope to serve every family in the state, and I was just wondering, if funding weren't an issue, do you really see that as a possibility? Mm-hmm. How many families do you think you could serve?
I think Ms. Forbush.
That would be in the, you know, in a perfect world, that would be possible. You know, but let's start where we can start and see where it falls.
Mm-hmm. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're running late, but I would be inconsistent and untrue to myself if I didn't raise these issues. I raised some of them when the program was initially funded. And there's nothing in my comments that lacks support for the program itself. It clearly is a high-quality, research-based, and may indeed be the best that Minnesota has to deliver. But it's the may that that's at issue for me, in the sense that I strongly support home visiting programs, but we have many others in the state that do similar kinds of on-the-carpet parent training. You know, I there's two in my own community. You know, we have one that's focused at immigrant and refugee parents, you know, that's run through our YWCA. We used to have an early ECFE used to run a home visiting program. And so my question is more, I think it's more to call us as legislators, that when we are investing in early childhood, which we clearly need to be doing, and this kind of on the ground with parents is really, I think, a very important investment. I think we should be looking at all programming that's available to us, and either creating a grant process that's open to all programs or funding programs on the basis of their outcomes. And indeed, your program may come to the top of the list in terms of outcomes, but because I don't know that, I have a level of discomfort in choosing it in a certain sense blindly.
Thank you. So. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, not a question, more of a unsolicited commercial. I want to thank JF&CS for their work, and I particularly appreciate the fact they gave out that they've served one Jewish family in this program, and the values that underlie that long-term institution in this community and their service to the whole community. But for members who are not familiar with Way to Grow, I've got several different angles in, and it's an excellent organization, and most importantly, when we look at achievement gap issues, they serve a highly diverse population, mm-hmm. but they do so with a highly diverse staff. Mm-hmm. And so when they go into a home, when they work with a family, they literally speak the language. Mm-hmm. literally and metaphorically. They know what the challenges are. They also know what the strengths and assets are in that family and in that community. And I think that is an asset then for that organization as they move forward, if this proposal goes forward, for the effectiveness that they'd be able to deliver. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Yeah, thank you. And final question, Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. A question. We have the baby boomer population, of course, is retiring at a record numbers, and recent articles in the paper and news reports that they are looking for ways to give back to the community, even a second job, second career. And I know I brought this up in Health and Human Services with MFIT, but they are looking for great opportunities to volunteer to help better our country and our state. Is your program looking for those kind of volunteers that I could at least bring a book to a parent? Of course, they're free at our local library systems, similar to Meals on Wheels. We got folk. We got a generation that are retiring engineers and doctors and scientists and garbage collectors and photographers and you name it, every career under the sun, and they want to help and volunteer to give back at no cost. Is your program using those great resources? And if not, why not?
Do you have any need for us senior citizens or those who will be in a short period of time?
Absolutely.
I can speak to that. First of all, volunteers aren't free. They have to be trained. They have to be supported. They have to be supervised, just like an employee. And second of all, our program staff also reflects the makeup of our clients in this program, our families. And so we have Somali home visitors, we have Spanish-speaking home visitors, we have African-American home visitors, and we also do have some volunteers who are home visitors. We would always look for more of those that would be helpful to us, but they need to reflect the makeup of our population.
Thank you. Would anyone in the audience like to testify for or against House File 1385? If not, Representative Seltzer, your final words?
I just want to thank everyone for hearing the bill this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope everyone enjoyed the candy. I forgot to bring it the first time that I Seriously, I do want to say that this is an amazing program with over a 40-year history of success. And these children in this program are really succeeding. And to Representative Breiner's part, I think that we should be looking to make more investments in these early learners. And I hope that the committee will consider investing in this program. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, testifiers. Representative Seltzer lays over House File 1385 for possible inclusion. Members, thank you for allowing us to go a little over time. We are adjourned.